I have made some good choices in my life, and I've made some not so good choices. And Shane gave me the choice of speaking this morning or tonight. Speaking tonight was not the better choice, and I have nobody to blame but myself. He gave me the choice, and I think it's kind of ironic that this auditorium is shaped a little bit like a baseball field, because Shane reared back and he hit one right over the center field fence there, and that was one of the best lessons I've heard in a long time. But I still appreciate the opportunity to speak to you tonight. And to compound things, after the lesson this morning, a couple of guys came up to me and said, "Are you sure you want to follow that?" And I won't mention any names, Ronnie Ray or Johnny Richardson, but I appreciate the confidence builder, but Shane, you set the bar pretty high. And I knew the potential was there. I've heard the boy speak, you know. He always does a great job. I still appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this evening. I like to occasionally challenge myself, you know, to speak. And this seemed like a good time to present a lesson about influence. It's something that everybody has. And full disclosure now, this is an adaptation of a lesson I heard 2 to 3 years ago, I guess. But I felt it had such broad application because everyone has some degree of influence. And so I decided to apply the principles and apply my own examples and modify this lesson. And I hope that you'll benefit from it as I think I have. You know, for hundreds or maybe thousands of years, man has been aware and even fascinated by shadows. Shadows have always had significance. And for example, in the earliest times, men used a sundial to tell time. And today, shadows have all kinds of scientific applications, from photographic compositions to solar and lunar eclipses. Shadows have a significance. And when I was in high school, we had a math teacher who had us calculate the height of a flagpole by measuring its shadow and the angle of the sun. People have actually made money making shadows with their hands. And I wonder how many hours children have spent playing shadow games. Well, there's a poem by Robert Louis Stevenson and about shadows, and it's found in a book called A Child's Garden of Verses. You're familiar with the beginning of this poem, but I want you to hear all of the poem. "I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me, and what can be the use of him is more than I can see. He's very, very like me from my heels up to the head, and I see him jump before me when I jump into my bed. The funniest thing about him is the way he likes to grow, not at all like proper children, which is always very slow. For he sometimes shoots up taller like an India rubber ball, and he sometimes gets so little that there's none of him at all. He hasn't got a notion of how children ought to play, and it can only make a fool of me in every sort of way. He stays so close beside me, he's a coward, you can see. I think shame to stick to nursie as that shadow sticks to me. One morning very early, before the sun was up, I rose and I found the shining dew on every buttercup. But my lazy little shadow, like an errant sleepy head, had stayed at home behind me and was fast asleep in bed." I want to talk to you about the influence that we have over others. And so this lesson has to do with us being a light in the world. So I want you to think about your shadow, because what your shadow is what all shadows are. Now, by definition, a shadow is a dark figure or an image that's cast on the ground by a body intersecting light. Now, since this is important to my lesson, I want to repeat that. A shadow is a dark image cast on the ground by a body intercepting light. Now, if we think of Christ as being the light and ourselves standing between the light and the world, our shadow is, for the purpose of this lesson, our influence. It's our life as revealed by the light. It is what I cast upon the world for my influence. I want you to go to a passage with me now as the basis for our lesson tonight. It's found in Acts, the 5th chapter. And we'll begin there. Now, it goes without saying that Luke is a great writer. I mean, of course he's a great writer. He's a divinely inspired writer. But I think he's a great writer in his own right as well, because he tells us things so forthrightly. But it's exactly because of this style of writing that we as readers might be inclined to overlook something, run right past something without even considering its significance. And it's because of this that I think when we read, we need to ask God to help us. To help us each time we read to see it as if for the first time. And we might gather truths and understanding that we might not otherwise gather. Because I've been guilty of this, and no doubt many of us have overlooked interesting facts and maybe even essential truths. And this is a case in point. I don't know how many times I've read this lesson, this passage in Acts, the 5th chapter, and I run right past the story. And then one day I read it and I stopped and I realized something that I had never seen before. So I want you to look at it with me, beginning at verse 12. And through the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were done among the people, and they were all with one accord in Solomon's porch. Yet none of the rest dared join them, but the people esteemed them highly. And believers were increasingly added to the Lord, multitudes of both men and women, so that they brought the sick out into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that at least the shadow of Peter passing by might fall on some of them. Now, I want you to understand what these people were doing. They thought Peter's power was so great that he didn't have to touch them. He didn't have to lay hands on them. He didn't have to pray for them. He didn't even have to be aware that they were there. They believed his power was so great that if they just took the sick out into the street and they laid them on pallets and or beds or couches, that if Peter came by and his shadow fell upon them, that they would be healed. Not Peter now, just his shadow. Now, I'll grant you that the fame of the apostles had attracted multitudes, particularly, I think, to Peter. And you might say that this was, for lack of a better term, the apostles' heyday. The people had seen the miracles. They knew about the healings. They knew about speaking in tongues. They knew about the death of Ananias and Sapphira being struck dead. Thousands were added to the church. And the miracles could not be denied. Not even by the Sanhedrin. Multitudes of men and women were added to the Lord. But nowhere prior to this occasion involving Peter's shadow is it said that the shadow of Peter or any other apostle had any miraculous effect. Now, what reason did they think this would work? There was no precedence for this. But I want you to look at the next verse, verse 16. Also, a multitude gathered from the surrounding cities to Jerusalem, bringing sick people and those who were tormented by unclean spirits. And they were all healed. Now, suppose we were those people. Maybe we had someone sick in our family. And we would want to pick the most opportune time to guarantee that the shadow of Peter might fall on us. Now, noon, when the sun is directly overhead, that might not be the best time. Because unless the sick person is placed in the road directly where Peter has to actually step over the person, we wouldn't stand a very good chance of his shadow falling upon us, would we? But late in the afternoon, when the shadow is low, the sun is low in the sky, and if we were on the opposite side of the road, Peter's shadow might fall across a crowd, two, three, five people deep, depending on how long Peter's shadow was. I think this is an amazing story. How long is your shadow? At the end of that day, Peter's shadow might have been influencing people for thousands of people. People who were sick. A long shadow affecting many, many people. So I want to take that idea, that concept, that our shadow is our influence on others, and I want to make it the substance of our lesson this evening. How long is your shadow? How widespread is your influence? I want to make a few points about that in our lesson this evening, and I want to suggest to you, my first point is that for the most part, our influence is unconscious. It's something that happens and we aren't even aware that it happens. We don't even know how we are influencing other people for the most part. Now, I'm not saying we can't consciously influence people. Advertisers do it all the time. I don't know how many times I've walked in a store and purchased something that I had no intention of buying when I walked in. As parents, you know, we try to influence our children, don't we? Sometimes successfully, sometimes not so much. But how many times have you noticed a little boy take one of his daddy's tools and distress that new coffee table? Or maybe try out daddy's shaving cream? Or a little girl, maybe she tries out mom's makeup. Or she uses a word that maybe she heard mom use, and she can't possibly know what that word means. So we aren't doing this on purpose. It's not like we're trying to teach our children how to shave or use makeup, are we? No. We're just going about our lives, but we're influencing others. Let me give you a Bible example, a biblical example of how this works. In the Galatian letter, in chapter 2, you remember this occasion when Peter was rebuked by Paul because what had Peter done? He'd been inconsistent. And Paul condemned him for this because Peter had first eaten with the Gentile Christians at Antioch. But when he was visited by certain Christians Jewish Christians from Jerusalem, he withdrew from the Gentile Christians. He played the hypocrite out of fear of offending the Jewish prejudice. And one result of this was that he unwittingly influenced others. Because I want you to look at verse 13 now in chapter 2. It says, "And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with the dissimulation." Barnabas. Now, Paul's longtime companion in bringing Gentiles to Christ. Barnabas, who had been reared in Cyprus and among the Gentiles, and who had labored with Gentiles and was committed and understood that there was no distinction between Gentile and Jew. Barnabas and possibly some of the other Jewish Christians at Antioch were influenced by Peter's action. And they also withdrew from the Gentile Christians. Now, was it Peter's intention to influence Barnabas in this way? No, probably not. Peter's only intention was to avoid offending the Jewish prejudice by acting the hypocrite. But in doing this, he unintentionally influenced others to follow him in this wrong. And while he probably could have and should have foreseen the effect that it would have, it would not have been his intent. No, it was unintentional. It was unfortunate. It was wrong, but it was unintentional. And of course, our influence doesn't always have to be negative. Fortunately, it can and should have a positive effect. I think recently Karen and I stopped at one of our favorite restaurants, and we had just been seated when another couple were seated at the table right behind Karen. And we had no sooner ordered than this gentleman walked over to the other couple's table, and he engaged this lady in a conversation. And I wasn't eavesdropping, but they were so close I could hear most of the conversation and that the man had with the lady. And the lady's husband did not participate in this conversation because, well, it was obvious that he was not well. I mean... Suffice it to say that the lady had her hands full. But this visitor wasn't concerned with her problem as he talked, and he talked about his children and his grandchildren. and their awards and their accomplishments and their homes and their cars. And it was just me for about 15 minutes. And their food came, and he still went on and on. But during all this, this lady never showed any impatience. There was no indication at all that she really wanted the man to leave so she could enjoy her meal and tend to her husband. And I thought, how long is this poor lady going to indulge this guy? How long is this going to go on? How long is she going to tolerate this? Well, we finished our meal, and I went to the cashier and paid. And as I was walking back to the table, I passed this guy as he was leaving the restaurant. So Karen and I gathered up our things, and as we walked by the lady's table, she smiled at me, and I couldn't help myself. I said, "You must be a retired teacher." And immediately she lit up. Her eyes just brightened. Her whole face smiled. And she reached out her hand. And I took her hand. And she said, "How did you know?" And I said, "Because you have so much patience." And nothing else was said. She just smiled at me knowingly. And we walked out. Now, here is one occasion where both a positive and a negative shadow was cast. She made such a good impression on us. Her gracious acceptance of this man, even though he was intruding. And I learned a couple of things that maybe I can be more aware and more understanding of the circumstances that people are laboring under. And maybe I can be a little more patient with others myself. You know, your shadow is always there. We can see it. It's always nearby, but we don't think about it. It reflects who we are, and other people are influenced by it. By the way we live our lives, there are people watching us and we don't even realize it. And while we can maybe mold it and shape it to some degree, it more or less reflects what we are in the moment that we find ourselves in the light. So it's not something that we alter all the time, consciously. I want to tell you that for the most part, we will influence others less by what we are and what we do here, right here, than by what we are and what we do outside those doors. Oh, sure, we'd like to think otherwise, wouldn't we? Because when we're here, we feel righteous and we feel closer to God as we pray and as we sing and as we read our Bibles. Because we're happy to be here, and surely we want people to be influenced by that, and they are, and that's good. I'm not denigrating that at all. But for the most part, we will influence more people more by what we are every day, by the way we are as we wait in the checkout line, by the way we act when we're cut off in traffic, by the way we interact with our server at a restaurant, and by the way that people see us, how they see us when we walk down the sidewalk or walk in the mall, because what we are is more determined by our casual conversations than our formal speeches, by what people see. In those unguarded moments, it is the spirit of our lives, not the spurts that really stand out to people. I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me. That's true. That's my influence. And in some cases, it's true. He can make a fool of me in every sort of way. The point I'm trying to make is that you influence others in the decisions that you make. You do not live in isolation. And the clothes you wear and the places you go and the friends you associate with and the music you listen to and the things you post on Facebook influence other people. They say something about who you are. That little shadow that goes in and out with me. How long is your shadow? This is my second point. Is that influence is one of the greatest powers on earth. It is. It's one of the greatest powers on earth. You know, we use this expression, well, he's afraid of his own shadow. And well, he should be. Because shadows influence people. It is that powerful. In Romans, the 14th chapter, Apostle Paul says this in verse 7. He says, "For not one of us lives for himself, and no one dies for himself." Now, he goes on to say that we live and die for the Lord. But he also goes further and says in verse 13, "Therefore let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall, in his brother's way. I will not influence others to do wrong. In verse 15, he says, "Yet if your brother is grieved because of your food, you are no longer walking in love. Do not destroy with your food the one for whom Christ died." Now, do you think Paul is talking to people who are intent on destroying people? Other people by the way they lived or by what they ate? No. But what Paul is reminding these people is that whether you want it to be this way or not, you influence people. Your actions, your attitudes, your words, they all influence people. It is that powerful for other people. And in Matthew 18:6, Jesus warns his disciples that if you cause one of these little ones to stumble, it would be better if a millstone were hung around your neck and you were cast into the sea. Don't let your influence negatively impact someone. It is that powerful. I want to tell this story, and I apologize for using my family as examples. I guess you could say that I don't get out much, and you'd be right. But I had to get permission for this one. Karen has stayed in touch with several lady friends from her college days, and just a few casually, a Christmas card, birthday card, or an occasional note. Some time ago, one of the ladies lost a parent. And one of the other ladies called her and said, "Would you accompany me to the funeral?" And so they drove to the funeral, and it just so happened that it was held at an Episcopal church. It also happened that this funeral was held midweek. Now, I don't know if this is a part of all funerals at Episcopal churches, but in this case, part of the service included participating in communion. And the way this was done was that each person in turn would go forward and receive communion from the priest. Well, Karen was sitting several rows back, and as each person took their turn now, each one of them, Karen turned to the person next to her, and she whispered, and she said, "I don't plan to participate in this. So when it comes my turn, I will just move aside, and you do whatever you feel you need to do." Now, mind you, up to this point, every person ahead of Karen had participated. And following her, there were a number who participated. But there were a significant number that did not. Now, I can't conclusively say that those who did not participate were influenced by Karen's refusal. But I'm pretty sure there were some. In fact, there was one lady who told her as much. I don't know. Maybe they were following their conscience. Maybe there were some who knew better. And we can discuss taking communion on some day other than the Lord's Day. But that's not my point tonight. My point is that your influence is powerful. We are all influencers and influenced by others. And that is a powerful mechanism for change. It works like that all the time. No one of us lives to ourselves or dies to ourselves. We don't live in a vacuum. We influence others by the lives that we live. How long is your shadow? How many people are you influencing like that? My third point is that influence is almost immortal. It is almost immortal. It goes beyond the grave. Hebrews 11:4 says this about Abel. "He being dead, yet speaks." The life of Abel, his dedication to God, his innocence as he died, the first person to die for doing what was right, he still speaks. But you don't have to be some noteworthy person to speak beyond the grave. Influence is the means by which we most often transmit the gospel. If I were to ask you tonight to raise your hand, if you just read the Bible, you didn't know a Christian, you didn't know anything about New Testament Christianity, but you just read your Bible and you found out what it meant to be a Christian and a disciple of Jesus Christ. And so you went out and you found someone who would baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. I dare say I would be surprised if there was more than one or two hands in an audience this size. But if I ask the question this way, how many of you are Christians because somebody told you about Jesus? Somebody preached to you about Jesus? Somebody modeled Jesus for you? Some parent or grandparent raised you to love the Lord, to follow Jesus? I dare say almost every hand would go up. And what is that? That is influence. It's shadows. It's shadows of preachers and teachers and parents and grandparents. It's shadows of brothers and sisters and neighbors. Influence speaks beyond the grave. I stand before you this evening, a disciple of Jesus Christ, because of a man I never knew. The man who influenced my grandmother to obey the gospel of Christ. Now, when my grandparents married, I'm talking about the couple that became my grandparents. They lived with my great-grandparents, my grandfather's parents and their younger children. And at that time, in the early to mid-1920s, my grandmother was not a member of the Lord's body. And each Lord's Day, my great-grandparents and their other children, well, all their children, would walk out the door and they would go to services with the Lord's people. And my grandmother would walk out the door and walk the other direction to the Presbyterian church. And later, at the lunch table, my great-grandfather would ask my grandmother questions. And he would gently and lovingly cause her to question the basis of her faith. And he would say, "Mary, what did they preach about today? What did your preacher tell you today? What did you learn in Sunday school today?" And over a period of time, she learned the truth and she obeyed the gospel of Christ. And after the death of my great-grandfather, she became the greatest influencer in the family, in her family. And so my father and his siblings became disciples of Jesus Christ and their spouses. And my parents taught me and my three siblings to love the Lord with all our soul, mind, and strength. And each of us obeyed the gospel of Christ. I have a number of cousins, and each of them have at one time in their lives bowed their knees to Jesus Christ as Lord and been baptized for the remission of their sins. Karen and I have two children, both of whom are Christians. All because of a man I never knew. A man who cared enough about his daughter-in-law, my grandmother, to motivate, to nurture, gently but persuasively, to come see what he had found in Jesus Christ. They being dead, yet speak. And as much as I would like to believe that my story is unique, it is not. Each of you who have obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ has almost certainly been influenced by someone who gave their time and their energy to teach you the truth of the gospel. And it may very well be that after you and I have gone to our eternal reward, that people that we, you and I, have influenced may come to know Jesus and speak of us in the same way that I have spoken about my great-grandfather. We can make that kind of difference if our shadows are long. If our shadows are long. And what can be the use of him is more than I can see. It is more than I can see. We just have no idea how and whom we are influencing by the lives that we live. My fourth and final point is that influence may be permanent. It may be permanent, and this is not necessarily good. Because sometimes we influence people in a negative way. And even when we learn better and turn back, we cause those people to walk in ways of destruction. You can change your ideas. You can change your future. You can change your ways. But it's possible that you may never reverse the effect that you have on others. They may always remember you for what you did that was wrong. You know, sometimes I think it's hard for us to forgive ourselves. And I think all of us have on occasion said or done something that maybe on reflection we'll look back on it and we'll second guess ourselves. And we replay it in our minds over and over. And suddenly we convince ourselves that we could have said it in a better way. Or maybe not at all. Maybe in a kinder way. And we convince ourselves that we have offended the person that we spoke to. And each time we play it back in our minds, it just sounds worse and worse. So we convince ourselves that we just have to go to that person. We simply need to apologize to make it right. And so we do. We go to that person. And we say something like, "Hey, you know that conversation we had the other day? Well, I really shouldn't have made that remark about so-and-so or whatever. And it was uncalled for, and I'm afraid I offended you. And I'm really sorry, and I hope that you can find it in your heart to forgive me." And you know, from my experience, you'll get a reaction something like this. It'll either be, "I don't even remember the conversation. I don't even remember that." Or maybe it'll be that, "Hey, don't worry about it. I didn't think a thing about it." And what's good about that is that you have a conscience. You cared enough about that person, about their feelings. And so you made the effort to make it right, even though maybe they weren't offended in the first place. But you know what ought to bother us much more than these offenses, whether they're real or imagined, or the ones that we don't know about? Or maybe we do know about them, and we carried it around like a ball and chain for the rest of our lives. And it might be carried in the lives of others who may be following our bitterness towards God's people, remain bitter all their lives. They don't want anything to do with God's people because we didn't want anything to do with God's people. I know parents who have wept out tears because they didn't live the life that they should have lived for a while. And then after coming to the Lord, they were unable to bring their children with them. That is sad. There's a really interesting story in 1 Kings, and this is the end of our lesson. 1 Kings chapter 21. You know this king, it's Ahab, one of the most wicked kings. And in verse 25 following, it says this about Ahab: "Surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him." Now, there's an evil shadow, right? "He acted very abominably in following idols, according to all that the Amorites had done, whom the Lord cast out before the sons of Israel." Now, you know what he had done. He conspired with Jezebel to take Naboth's vineyard. And they lied about him, and Naboth was stoned. And then God sent Elijah to pronounce judgment on Ahab. And then it says this, when Ahab heard what Elijah had to say, in verse 27, "And it came about when Ahab heard these words that he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and fasted, and he lay in sackcloth and went about despondently." Now let me say, God knew Ahab's heart. God knew that this was an outward show. He appeared to humble himself. And in spite of the fact that God knew his heart, God granted a reprieve of sorts to Ahab. So here's a guy who seems to turn it around. As far as outward appearances go, he seemed to turn his life around. Now, this is impressive because Ahab is a king. He can influence a lot of people. A guy as wicked as Ahab seems to turn his life around, and you would think that people would follow him. You'd think that everybody would say, hey, there's something going on in Ahab's life for him to turn his life around like this. Let's find out what it is. Let's become like he is. Let's turn our lives around also. But then you get this in chapter 22. At the very end of that chapter, beginning at verse 51, it says this about Ahab's son, Ahaziah. The son of Ahab became king over Israel in Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and he reigned 2 years over Israel. So, okay, let's see how he did. In his eye, he sees his father try to turn things around, even though it was insincere. He saw the outward appearance. So, it says this, though, about Ahab's son, Ahaziah. He did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father, and in the way of his mother, and in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who caused Israel to sin. So he served Baal and worshipped him and provoked the Lord God of Israel to anger according to all that his father had done. You don't make your shadow what it ought to be, you run the risk of influencing people negatively till they die. I run that risk, and you run that risk. I have this little shadow that goes in and out with me, and what can be the use of him is more than I can ever see. How long is your shadow? What shadow are you casting on others? What influence are you rendering for those who are around you in this place? For those who are around you in your home? For those who are around you in your workplace? For those who are around you in school? What shadow are you casting? How long is your shadow? That's our influence. That's how Jesus chose to influence the world, by casting light beyond us and through us to a world that watches us. That light, it calls you tonight, impenetrable, pure, and holy light. It calls you to come to the cross, to give yourself to Jesus, maybe not even realizing how that act might influence someone generations from now. Children, grandchildren, neighbors, friends, spouses, parents, do what's right. Don't put this off. Don't put it off. You can come to Jesus. You can cast your burden on him. You can name him Lord. You can die to self and live again. We sing. I encourage you to come.